Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, it's both of us, me, Dr. Tony, and Dr. Lisa are here.
Yay!
We're back together again. And we're talking about vitamin D. I think this is a really important topic since it is the fall and of 2021. We're still dealing with a pandemic. And there is a big reason why I was really wanting to do this episode on vitamin D, Lisa. Yes. Vitamin D deficiency is still underdiagnosed, underprevented, and undertreated in 60 to 90% of the worldwide population. Here in Canada, about 60%, just a little under 60% of our population has a vitamin D deficiency, which is, you know, in the research, they're showing less than 75% nanomoles per liter. We'll talk more about kind of the units and what to look for in terms of trying to find out, are you vitamin D deficient? What is your level of vitamin D? And here's where I want to start with a confession, Lisa.
Okay. What's going on, Tony, or what happened?
So we've talked about this before in different episodes and how important it is to test your level of vitamin D so that you know whether or not you're getting a good level of vitamin D. And that can be tricky because at least here in Canada, you know, we have these wonderful provincial healthcare systems where we can go and see a family doctor and not pay out of pocket. We can get pretty standard blood work and not have to pay out of pocket. But definitely here in Alberta, where I am, you have to pay out of pocket for vitamin D testing for the vast majority of people. So I was a little behind in getting my blood work from my family doctor. And I was finally going and I thought, okay, I really want to know what my vitamin D level is. It's probably been a few years since I've had it tested. Let me just pay for it, add on. So then I go for my blood work. And guess what I found out, Lisa?
What?
I was vitamin D deficient.
Oh, no. So even naturopaths can be low.
After all of this talk about supporting our immune systems, taking our vitamins, all of those things, I was not that regular with my vitamin D intake. And I was deficient. I was shocked, Lisa. I was shocked.
Aww. Did you take a break from taking it, or what do you think was the reason?
I think I was so focused on giving Frankie her vitamin D every day that I wasn't as focused on me giving my vitamin D every day. Especially there can be vitamin D is a fat soluble vitamin. You typically want to take it with food. And sometimes I would think, oh, I haven't had quite enough food yet. And then I just wasn't getting my vitamin D in. So
It happens. We get our intention goes somewhere else, right? So you're still doing a great job with your health, but which is just a reminder, right? We need to check these numbers and see where we're at.
Absolutely. I'm so glad I did that test because otherwise I wouldn't have had any idea. And now it's really given me that motivation to make sure that I'm taking my vitamin D every day. So that's why I was really inspired to do this episode today as well to, you know, because how many other moms are out there really paying attention to maybe their kids' health and their kids' supplementation, but not necessarily taking care of their own?
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah. And even myself, I got my levels tested last October and I was at 101, which is okay. But, you know, we like to aim for about 125 or so. So it was a reminder to take a little bit extra. And I've had patients who've tested low and they're like, what's happening? I'm taking 3000 units a day. And with further questioning, I discover they're not taking it with any food. They're taking it on an empty stomach. So yes, as you mentioned, Tony, you need to have it with a meal with some fat in it, right? That's going to help you absorb it a lot better. And the tablets aren't really as well absorbed as some of the liquid ones. And some of the liquid ones are made almost water soluble. So you absorb it pretty, like a lot better than just a tablet or a full fat soluble liquid. So we'll get into that.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the questions to even ask is, you know, anyone out there who's listening, are you at higher risk for being vitamin D deficient? There's a number of things to look at in terms of how we get vitamin D and who may need more vitamin D and who may need less vitamin D. There's different risk factors for deficiency, and that can include having darker skin, having a darker skin tone, more melanin, that can decrease the amount of vitamin D that you would get from sunshine. Also, people of a higher weight may have higher levels of vitamin D. As we age, we can have lower levels of vitamin D in our systems. When we're not getting enough sunlight or especially not going outside, but if we are going outside and really slathering ourselves in a lot of sunscreen or, you know, SPF, you know, an overprotection from sunlight or deprivation of sunlight can reduce the levels of vitamin D. And even some issues with absorption of vitamin D. You know, we already talked about the fact that it's a fat-soluble vitamin. You need to have it with fatty food. But if you're not absorbing even your fats properly or in nutrients in general, you know, people especially who have an inflammatory bowel disease will have that issue. And then there are even some medications that can interfere with the proper use and even increase the excretion of vitamin D from our body. Things like prednisone, other anti-inflammatory steroids, and even anticonvulsants medications can have an impact. So now, and why do we care about vitamin D? Why is vitamin D even important? You know, vitamin D plays so many roles in the body, Lisa. It's not just about bone density, right?
That's right. I know it's called a vitamin, right? But it should be really called a pro-hormone. It's kind of in a class of its own because it has actions on so many systems in the body. And, you know, where do we actually make it? So we talk about, you know, the sun hitting the skin. If you have sunscreen on, you can't make it. So cholesterol is a precursor, and that's in our skin too. I know we just think of cholesterol clogging up our arteries. You can listen to our cholesterol episode to see what we think about that. But you do need cholesterol as a precursor to your hormones to make vitamin D in the skin, because the sun hits that cholesterol in your skin and then it converts it into a substance that's then activated in your liver and kidneys to make your vitamin D levels. And this pro-hormone, this vitamin D, we know not only impacts how we absorb calcium and our bone health, but it also improves our cell differentiation. It reduces cellular growth, reduces, you know, potentially cancer. It controls and regulates our genes, reduces inflammation, our risk of autoimmunity. We know it reduces aches and pains in the body, fibromyalgia symptoms, boosts serotonin and mood, and like I mentioned, our bone health too. But we're going to break all of those down, but we want you to, you know, get out of the idea that it's just for bone health and that's all. It impacts our whole body. And I see so many patients, I'm getting patients tested now all the time. I did fairly regularly before everything going on with, you know, immunity and needing to strengthen our immune system. But I'm testing more regularly and so many patients are low. And when they supplement and get their levels up, they just describe themselves feeling better and they can't quite pinpoint it, but they're like, oh, I have less aches and pains. My mood is better. I just feel like better overall, less fatigued. You're probably seeing the same thing, right, Tony?
Absolutely. And it this is really not, it's not just about a subjective, and there's reasons for this. There's an amazing naturopathic doctor in the States, Dr. Alex Vasquez, who has done a ton of peer-reviewed reviews of all of the research being done on vitamin D. And he's pretty adamant about how we really need to look at vitamin D overall for our health around the world. And to even just to quote him, he said that the most common manifestations of vitamin D deficiency in adults is depression, infection, and chronic pain. So it's no wonder if people are low in vitamin D and start taking vitamin D that they feel better, because there's all of those impacts that vitamin D has in our body. So even if we're not necessarily full-on deficient, a low vitamin D status can manifest as muscle pain, bone pain, fatigue, depression, chronic infections, even impacts our microbiome and our dysbiosis in our digestive tract. It can impact our cognitive function, and also it can impact how, you know, our body uses a number of different medications, especially in terms of statins and other things, and can also increase the risk of our immune system being dysfunctional and increasing the chance and risk of cancerous processes from happening, but also autoimmunity as well.
Definitely. And I was listening to Dr. Mark Hyman, and he was talking about an increased risk in preterm birth. And that costs, you know, tons of healthcare dollars, tons of stress for families. If patients were to get a vitamin D level tested, that could easily be prevented. And they're now starting to, and they have been studying vitamin D in relation to hormones and perimenopause and menopause. So I know they're starting to study it in relation to hot flashes, but they're really discussing the impacts that it has, you know, as we're entering into this transitory period where we're getting more tired, more aches and pains, there's a higher risk of depression. So optimizing our vitamin D levels are really key. And as our estrogens, you know, fluctuating and then in the long term dropping, we know estrogen is key for bone growth and preventing osteoporosis. So when that is shifting during the hormonal transitions and eventually, you know, bottoming out, then we really want to make sure our vitamin D levels are optimal. And I think, Tony, you came across a study with vitamin D affecting the vaginal tissue, which I thought was so interesting.
I was so interested and surprised, pleasantly surprised, that this research has actually been done. And because it's one of those things, again, we think of vitamin D for all of these other issues, but when we're thinking also of vitamin D to support our immune system, we also have to think about vitamin D supporting our exterior barrier defenses. And that includes our skin, our mucous membranes. And you can think of your epithelial cells kind of like being the bricks in a brick wall. And then there's the mortar that holds those bricks together. Those are your tight junctions. And then we also even have like weatherproofing on that brick wall, you know, a waterproofing surface, which would be a kind of antimicrobial peptides and other substances that help to, you know, protect that wall. So we have those in our system. We have those along our mucous membranes, in our mouth, in our digestive tract, in our respiratory tract, but also in our genital urinary tract. So there has actually been research done on women, postmenopausal women, who are experiencing vaginal atrophy. This is not necessarily a fun piece of aging. You know, it can really increase vaginal dryness, vaginal pain, especially with intercourse. And there has been more than one study done on how vitamin D actually supports the proliferation of our vaginal epithelial tissue so that it can reduce dryness and pain. There was a study done where it was just a suppository, a topical suppository of 1,000 international units of vitamin D. So not a huge amount of vitamin D. And just over 8 weeks, so only after 2 months, the dryness and the pain was reduced. And, you know, it'd be really interesting to see even what the impact would be if, in addition to that vaginal suppository, what if there was also an oral dose of a, you know, a good level of vitamin D as well?
Good point. Yes. So fascinating, right? To use it in suppository form, because that's not usually how we think of taking vitamin D. And I loved your description of how it benefits the immune function and creating that visual. And we do know that people that have low vitamin D levels are up to 55% more likely to get an upper respiratory tract infections than those who had sufficient levels. And higher doses are more protective. They protect the lungs, they decrease inflammation. So we also think about vitamin D in asthma as well. And we know magnesium is an important component as well. It helps to activate our vitamin D. So you want to make sure you have optimal levels of both. And you'll see a lot of specifically bone formulas, bone building formula supplements would have, you know, calcium, magnesium, D. And they're also incorporating vitamin K2 as well. So vitamin D helps your body absorb calcium from your food and your supplements in the gut. And the K2 is really important to tell calcium where to go, right? Because calcium can deposit in parts of your body where we don't want it to be, for example, lining the arteries like an atherosclerosis. But we need some of these other nutrients like K2, for example, magnesium, to tell the calcium to go to the bones so it has that bone strengthening effect.
Absolutely. And this is also even where a lot of my patients are asking me, you know, what kind of vitamin D do I need? Do I need to make sure that I'm having vitamin D3 or is it D2? You know, what's important? And this is, you know, it is an important thing to just pay attention to. The vast majority of supplements now I find are vitamin D3. And I, oh geez, let me see if I can even work my mouth around the actual name for vitamin D3.
Cholecalciferol.
Cholecalciferol. That's what it is.
Nice.
that is the form of vitamin D that's produced in our skin naturally. It's also the form of vitamin D that is consumed when we're, you know, getting vitamin D from food, although that isn't a great source of vitamin D because there are, you know, low amounts of D3 in different types of food, fish, cod liver oil, egg yolks, milk, liver. There is another form of vitamin D, vitamin D2, and that is a vitamin D that is typically produced from fungi and eradicating fungi. So things like mushrooms. And it has been found to be a less efficient precursor to our biologically active vitamin D, which is, you know, 1,25-D hydroxy vitamin D or calcitriol. That's what it is. And so that's a potentially less effective and even potentially more toxic form of vitamin D. There has been some research done using vitamin D2, but most of the research, especially nowadays, is using D3, and the vast majority of supplements will be vitamin D3.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. And just to note too, for vegans, so vitamin D3 is made from lanolin from sheep's wool. So, you know, they don't have to sacrifice the animal, but, you know, maybe they are for other reasons, but that's something to consider. So I know they do have eradicated fungi powder, mushroom powder that I saw, but, you know, it's something to consider monitoring. You want to make sure you're going to be absorbing it. It's not going to be more toxic, but that's just some food for thought, right? Because it is derived from an animal, that D3, but we do know that's the most active form. And I have so many patients say, well, I go out in the sun all the time. I don't need to take it. Maybe I'll just take 1,000 in winter. But as you mentioned, Tony, we know sunscreen, you know, clothing will inhibit that sunlight production of vitamin D. So really important to get tested. And then, you know, 1,000 a day in the winter is definitely not going to cut it, because I was just in the acceptable range taking 2,000 3,000 3,000 a day. Before that, maybe 4,000 a day. I kind of fluctuate all over the place. But and then food wise, yeah, you'd probably have to have, like, you know, 10 tablespoons of cod liver oil, and I don't know how many pounds of sardines or herring. You know, it's not going to get to the levels that you need to have for the health benefits. Unfortunately, we are meant to see the sun with unprotected skin. Granted, you know, we have damage the ozone layer, so sun is a little more toxic to us now. But that's why we do need to take supplementation.
Absolutely. And actually, even with you just talking about having to take high levels of cod liver oil, there was a study where they had, it was a small study of 10 patients with multiple sclerosis. And over 2 years, they supplemented with 5,000 international units of vitamin D, but that was from 20 grams of cod liver oil. So that's 20,000 milligrams of cod liver oil. So that would be tablespoons every day for 2 years. Now, it did reduce the number of exacerbations of their multiple sclerosis with an absence of adverse effects. However, they needed to take, again, that high level of cod liver oil.
Most people can't even stomach a teaspoon, right? So that's not going to have very high compliance, that's for sure.
Exactly. And especially, you know, when we're talking about getting tested, you know, something to really pay attention to, kind of like you mentioned, Lisa, there's, you know, different levels. You can not be deficient, but that is that actually an optimal level of vitamin D in your system? And different labs will report different reference ranges of what is deficient or what is not. So it really is important to really consider not just not being deficient, but actually, and not even just getting a sufficient level of vitamin D, but getting into an optimal range. And based on different research, there are different proposals for what that optimal range is. And, you know, it can be anywhere from, I've seen low end of the range being around 20 to 65 nanograms per milliliter, or here in Canada, we report vitamin D levels in nanomoles per liter. So it could be anywhere from 100 to 160, but I've even, you know, Dr. Vasquez was even proposing an optimal physiological range of 125 to 225 based on levels that are found in different populations of people. There was a study on pregnant rural African women, lifeguards in the US and in Israel, and even farmers in Puerto Rico having levels in that range between 125 to 225 nanomoles per liter. So that's also important. You know, we've mentioned before on the podcast, it's not just about being in the reference range for different lab tests and blood tests. You really want to look at an optimal level. And so that's important to kind of pay attention to. And we'll post in our show notes some different ranges to be aware of, so that when you go ahead and get your vitamin D level and actually see what the number is, you can get a sense of where in an optimal range you may be heading.
Yeah. And you want to, you know, I kind of do a rule of thumb: for every 10 points that you're lower than optimal, ideally you're taking 1,000 units. For each 10 points, you want to go up. So let's say you test 70 and you want to be maybe 120, then that would be 50 difference, right? So I would do 5,000 units a day for at least 3 months and then retest. Sometimes, you know, people are saying don't even retest until the 6 month mark, because it can take time to get to an optimal level. There's so much variability in how we all absorb it, but that's what I use as a guideline. And then retesting is really key to make sure, okay, are you getting it in? Are you getting enough? And then just to confirm, are you taking it with food, with some fatty food? And, you know, we've talked about the deficiency symptoms. So toxicity is really where people can take huge amounts for several months and still not have toxicity. You know, maybe your level has to be over 200 or higher, depending on the nanomoles per liter, depending on the resource you're looking at. But it's really, I've never seen anyone too high. It's, you know, I'm sure there are people if they're taking like 50,000 units a day for years on end or months on end, but there can be what's called hypercalcemia. So So some of those symptoms can be nausea, vomiting, weakness, frequent urination, potentially, you know, increased formation of calcium stones, kidney stones, more kidney problems or bone pain, but it's really rare, right? So, but again, you know, you can always go in the opposite direction if you're going to be overzealous for long periods of time. But a lot of doctors use strategies of giving, you know, 5,000, 10,000 or more units for a short period of time and retesting and not having any issues and then going back to kind of a more moderate dose.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, the retesting is really key because, you know, we all have our individual biochemistry and our genetics that can impact what is the right level for us. So like you said, Lisa, really important to look at getting a and testing after a good 3 or 4 months to see, okay, what is my level? And then looking at, yeah, testing every year or two to make sure that you're still at that level and not dipping down like I did.
Well, for sure. I'm due to get my test now. So it was last October. So I'm going to see where I'm at and optimize my levels further if needed. So it's always interesting to see, I think.
Yeah. And I also think it's can be a great idea to get tested in the fall, winter, or even spring, not in the summer when you may be outside a little bit more and getting more vitamin D dosing, but really looking at what your level is when you're not getting that optimal amount of sun exposure or production of the vitamin D through your skin.
For sure. Yeah. Because my October level could have reflected even, over the summer, a little bit of extra exposure. Maybe I wasn't wearing sunscreen on certain parts of the body. So then, you know, it wouldn't be reflective of what's happening in January or February, where I'm most likely to be the lowest, right? So it'd be interesting to test the middle of winter. Mm-hmm. And we talked about a lot of great effects of vitamin D. We didn't really touch on the effects on our insulin and blood sugar, right? So we know with type 2 diabetes that low vitamin D is associated with insulin resistance and our, you know, beta cells in our pancreas not working properly. So we know it impacts how our insulin works to be the messenger to take glucose out of our bloodstream. And, you know, the higher or longer glucose is in our bloodstream, the more damage there is to our tissues, our eyes, our kidneys. So people do have better insulin sensitivity when they had optimal levels of vitamin D. Higher vitamin D status related to a 60% improvement in insulin sensitivity. And they compared that to metformin, the drug commonly used in diabetes. And that was a 13% improvement in insulin sensitivity by using metformin. So that's huge if vitamin D is really helping that insulin to work better, even than insulin, according to this study. So that's another fascinating issue that can be potentially prevented by optimizing your vitamin D.
Absolutely. Another, you know, system that we don't necessarily think of in terms of supporting with vitamin D is our cardiovascular system. And there's actually even been research showing that the risk of heart attack is twice as high for people with lower levels of vitamin D, you know, closer to a deficient level than those with a vitamin D status that is sufficient. They were even doing studies on patients with congestive heart failure, and they had been shown to have lower levels of vitamin D. And there was even been some research in infants with congestive heart failure and showing that vitamin D is on the lower side and that vitamin D can be helpful with that as well. Also, even with blood pressure, it's been shown that blood pressure is typically higher in the winter than the summer. So there's, and with an increase difference when there are greater distances from the equator. And also it has been shown that blood pressure is affected by skin pigmentation. So this is all consistent with looking at the role of vitamin D in regulating blood pressure. And there was a study showing that when treated with UV light 3 times a week over 6 weeks, patients with hypertension increased their vitamin D levels and their blood pressure fell significantly. And also even treating with vitamin D, and not a high amount of vitamin D, 800 international units isn't very high, but over a 2 month period, that lowered both blood pressure and heart rate as well.
So that's a good push to go lie on a beach somewhere, you know, when it's safe to travel. I know some people are going away now to some beach destinations and maybe, you know, not cover up for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, if you're not going to get burnt and your blood pressure could go down. That's amazing.
Oh, that sounds wonderful, Lisa.
We can dream. Can you write it off as a health expense, please?
Oh, that is a brilliant idea. I love that. You know, especially maybe those of us who have a touch of or definitely experience seasonal affective disorder. We've done an episode on that, and we can really link to our episode on seasonal affective disorder in the show notes. But this definitely, you know, links with this idea of vitamin D being an antidepressant. And interestingly enough, Lisa, there was recently a study done where they showed a dose of 100,000 international units of vitamin D was superior to light therapy in the treatment of seasonal affective disorder after 1 month.
Wow. And yes, they used a really high dose.
Yeah. So again, you know, we don't, a lot of people will think of vitamin D in terms of immune system, even in terms of our bone health, but really this key piece of vitamin D to have antidepressant effects, I think is just so important and something that we don't often think about. Vitamin D does activate the serotonin synthesizing process. So with vitamin D plays a crucial role in producing our neurotransmitters, and especially that, you know, happy neurotransmitter serotonin that we think of, as well as decreasing inflammation in the body. And we've definitely talked about how inflammation in the brain can impact our mood and the way we think as well. So really important to be thinking about how vitamin D can play a role in our mood and in depression and anxiety as well.
I know if people aren't sold yet to get their levels tested and take the right amount, I don't know what will sell them. We can keep going on and on with the studies, right? And the conditions, and even, you know, looking at vitamin D being optimal to support fertility, and taking vitamin D with the right amount of calcium may help in people with PCOS to normalize their menstruation and make them more fertile. And we know in PCOS, there's an insulin issue. So we talked about vitamin D impacting that. So we could go on and on and on.
Absolutely. And maybe with more research, we'll really come to really recognize conventionally and mainstream how important vitamin D is. I don't know. You know, even when, you know, looking at researchers who focus on cancer prevention, you know, there's one researcher who proposed that an adequate exposure of UV light and or supplementation of vitamin D could actually save more than 23,000 American lives per year from a reduction in cancer mortality alone.
Wow.
It's really, yeah, it's, again, it's really incredible. The research is out there. There still needs to be more research, especially when it comes to, I think, immune function and cancer prevention and treatment, because a lot of, I think, the conventional traditional research has used low doses of vitamin D, where there is new research that does suggest that our physiologic requirement of vitamin D is around 3,000 to 5,000 international units a day. So, and that our blood levels do take that 3 to 4 months of daily supplementation to really reach that level and plateau. So, and some research won't use that level of vitamin D. They'll be using lower levels of vitamin D, and some will, again, only looking at a 2 month mark. So, you know, what will we really learn about the potential of vitamin D if we do shift that idea of looking at higher doses and longer periods of time?
Mm-hmm. And tracking participants' blood levels too, right? To see if they're absorbing it. So yeah, when you're reading vitamin D studies, always look at what dose did they use? How long did they use it for? And then, you know, decide, do you think this is a valid study? But more and more studies are using higher doses and showing the benefits. And there still are studies showing benefits with lower doses, the 400, 800 range too, but that's really not not enough. And most of the research is showing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a huge, huge potential by just really paying attention to your vitamin D supplementation and also getting your vitamin D levels checked so that you're not falling into a deficient mode like I did this
week. Oh, it happens. You're back on track and you'll get retested, and I'm sure it's going to be amazing.
That's fingers crossed. That's what I'm hoping for.
Nice.
Awesome. So now, do you think that everyone out there has a sense of the importance of vitamin D after this episode, Lisa?
I think so. I really do. How about you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Too.
Now, I don't think I can say vitamin D again.
Okay, perfect. Well, then let's move into the next part of our episode and let's talk about our super mom moments, our mama mess ups, and even our mama must haves.
Yeah, I think you have a super mom moment to share, Tony.
I do. And this is, you know, thankfully, it's nice to have a really good partner when it comes to parenting and when it comes to life itself too. I'm super grateful for my partner. And this is where it was actually his idea to take Frankie to the movies. And I absolutely agreed and encouraged him to take Frankie to the movie theater. And actually it was Frankie's first time at the movies. They went and saw the Paw Patrol movie, of course.
Aww,
she's
nice.
Obsessed with Paw Patrol. So, and then I took that opportunity to go see with my mom the Beyond Van Gogh immersive experience, which was amazing. It was like going to a museum, and it had been so long. One of the things that I love to do when I travel is going to museums and seeing different art exhibits around the world. So it was so lovely to really surround myself with beauty in a whole different way and get to see art in a whole different way. So I loved it. And again, so I'm grateful that it worked out for me to take that time, that adult time for myself, and grateful for Frankie's daddy for taking that.
That's definitely a super mom moment. You got to do something with your mom and something that really filled your cup up. So I love that.
Yeah, thanks. Now, Lisa, I know you're an awesome mom. And sometimes there's, even with awesome moms, you have some mama mess ups. Do you want to share with us today?
I do. So we've really been into board games, and we got one. It's called Despicable Me Minion Game of Life. So it's like the game of life, right? And instead of, like, you know, you're supposed to collect little bunches of bananas, whoever has five bunches first wins. So Pete Stewart and I were playing last night, and I had four bunches of bananas. I just needed one more, and I spun and I landed on a spot that meant I had to steal a banana, and it had to be from Stuart. So it wasn't going to be from Pete. Normally I'd steal from him because I know Stuart would get upset, but I was like, oh, I'm going to win. So I didn't even like pause or explain it to Stuart. I just grabbed his banana and I was like, woohoo, I won. And then he started to bawl and he had a meltdown because he thought I was being mean to him, and I could have taken one of daddy's bananas, but I chose to take one of his. So I was like, oh, whoops, that was a mess up. I didn't pause and explain, you know, Stuart, this means I have to steal your banana. It's one of the game rules. You know, I can't steal daddy's. So I realized, okay, next time I'll just have to explain things a little bit more. But he had a little bit of a meltdown, and, you know, he got over it. But he's learning how to lose, which is, I think, a hard lesson. So that's been a bit of a challenge. If we play before bed and he doesn't win, Pete and I are like, uh-oh. Oh. In a mood for a little bit. But we're having a lot of fun playing games. So it may not sound like it, but it's actually really fun.
It sounds great and sounds like a great thing to start, you know, when they're young, so that, again, they can learn how to lose. But yeah, it does sound like you kind of got caught up in the moment. Sounds
like a great competitive.
Sounds like a great learning experience, though, Lisa.
It was, that's for sure. So anyway, we made it through the night. And Tony, what's your mama must have?
So my mama must have for this week is related to what we were talking about in terms of vitamin D. I could talk about vitamin D all day, Lisa. And so my mama must have this week is having a good vitamin D drop. And I'm actually a big fan of having an emulsified vitamin D drop so that it is better absorbed and there's less need to have it with some fatty food or fat soluble food. So it is better absorbed. And I typically will make sure that, you know, having an emulsified drop, I'll also have a vitamin D drop with a little bit of vitamin D and K. And that's, you know, something that I use for both me and Frankie. So definitely a must have for this week for all you mamas out there. Vitamin D drops, easy way to get your vitamin D in.
Definitely. And some of them taste really good too. So you just have to be careful. You don't want to take too much. You're like, oh, lemon meringue pie. Mm.
Hilarious. How about you, Lisa? What's your mama must have for this week?
It ties in with my mess up. So definitely board games. I mentioned that Minions Game of Life one. So that's great because it gets Stuart, he's the banker. So he's counting money and figuring out adding and subtracting. And then we got a Disney Bingo DVD game. So we really enjoy that. Mousetrap, you know, you still have to build all the contraptions, but that's really fun. And then we got a really good one called Don't Make Me Laugh, where you're acting things out, but we call it Don't Make Me Mad, because if he loses, Stuart gets mad. So, but yeah, there's some really fun games out there, lots of variety, and we're having more games nights on the weekend, sometimes during the week too.
Oh, I love that idea. I'm going to definitely put that on my list of, you know, games and toys to consider for Frankie, especially as she's getting a little bit older. The game, I've always been a fan of that Game of Life. So having a Despicable Me Minion version sounds really fantastic.
Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun. I guess I don't get out much. So,
you know, pandemic life, Lisa, this is why you have to get that fun somewhere.
That's right. Although I did play Cards Against Humanity with some ladies from the Wild Collective. We had a safe, like, physical distancing event, and that was hilarious. I was pretty shocked at what some of the cards said, but that was definitely an adult game. So
super fun. Awesome. So now, Lisa, do you have any events coming up? Anything outside of practice that you wanted to share with people?
Yeah, I just closed enrollment for my next group of the Wild Collective, but you can get on the wait list for my next enrollment. I'm hoping it's going to be in person in the spring. So you go to wildcollectivetoronto.com. So you don't want to miss out. Get on the wait list so you'll be the first in the know to hear about this unique and revolutionary women's health community initiative. And Tony, what do you have going on?
Well, I am having my regular hypnobirthing online classes happening again. Yeah, fingers crossed that we'll be able to do some in-person classes next year. But I do have a monthly info session for expecting parents who are really looking to decrease fear and anxiety around birth and wanting to really increase the trust in their instincts and in their body during labor and birth. So for those monthly info sessions, you can go to hypnobirthingcalgary.com/register and join me.
Amazing. Such an important service to help expecting parents, you know, even outside of a pandemic, just to trust their body and then give them that extra support too. So I love it.
Thanks. So thanks everyone for joining us today. Again, you can find our show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com. Please feel free to email, connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd also love you to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. That allows other perimenopausal mamas to find us more easily as well. So stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Take care, everybody. Get your vitamin D.
Bye.